Good evening, everyone, and thanks for taking time to participate in our teletown hall. Hopefully we didn't catch you in the middle of dinner. If we did, we apologize. I just wanted to highlight the effort that's going on in Olympia right now. As you all know, I'm sure the legislature is now in its second special session. None of us are pleased about that, but that does happen from time to time. Wanted to give you a little bit of history about special sessions. I'm just reminded that I'm supposed to let you know I'm Representative Springer. Representative Goodman will follow me. The legislature finished on time without a special session in 2004, 2005, 2006, 7, 8, and 9. We have, in fact, had special sessions in 10, 11, and 12, and we're facing one again this year with a budget crisis that has been somewhat insurmountable. Although there was some good news last week, we did reach a compromise with the Senate Majority Caucus. So I think we're on the verge of an agreement that I'm confident we'll see probably in the next 5 to 7 days. So with that, let me turn it over to Representative Goodman to share a few words, and then we'd love to hear your questions.
Thanks, Larry. This is Representative Roger Goodman speaking. And thank you for participating in this town hall this evening. It's kind of the democratic process that we really value. We're looking forward to hearing your questions. So I, too, have been helped slogging it through down in Olympia during these special sessions. We're not pleased that we haven't reached agreement on the budget. I am very concerned that we are not appropriating enough funds for our public schools, our K through 12 system. And negotiations are ongoing. We'll see what happens in the next 10 days or so. If we do not reach agreement on the budget before June 30th, July 1st, the government will shut down. Offices will close. No one gets paid. Hunting season is closed. Parks closed, and so forth. We want to avoid that, and I think everyone does. So I'm very much hoping that we can reach an agreement on the budget and get out of town and move on into the interim period. I have been working on a drunk driving bill, a DUI bill, a comprehensive bill, and there is bipartisan agreement that we need to keep up the pressure to get drunk drivers off the roads, and that bill is also moving, even though it's not related to the budget. We do have a bipartisan agreement, and I hope that bill will pass also as we wrap up our business in Olympia. So again, thanks for the opportunity to listen to you this evening. We look forward to your calls.
Thank you, Representative Springer and Representative Goodman, for those introductions. This is a reminder to anyone who has just joined the call. You are on a live telephone town hall with Representatives Goodman and Springer from the 45th Legislative District. And if you'd like to ask a question, anything about the state budget, about funding our education system, about public safety, please press star 3 on your phone right now, and you will be sent into the queue to ask the representative a question. Right now, we have on the line Bobby from Kirkland, and Bobby has some concerns about the gas tax proposal.
Hi, Representative Springer and Goodman. Thanks for doing this tonight. I heard something about a possible, 10-cent gas tax increase. Can you, explain if that's going to happen or, what that pays for? Because that just seems like a lot to me.
Sure, Bobby. This is Representative Springer, and thanks for the call, or thanks for the question. There is a proposal in Olympia, both from the Senate and the House, to fund our next round of transportation projects, and part of the funding mix for those projects, it's about an $8 billion list of projects, does include a 10-cent gas tax increase. Bear in mind that right now, just to give that in perspective, when you go to the pump and buy a gallon of gas, no matter what it costs, whatever the pump cost is, you pay 39 cents of that cost goes to the state, and that's our sole source of funding for our highway system. So there is a proposal to add 10 cents to make that 49 cents. Wouldn't all happen in 1 year. It would be over a three-year period that we would then use to pay off bonds to finish the 520 bridge, to replace highway damage on the I-90 corridor, to begin replacing the bridge over the Columbia River, as well as the north-south freeway in Spokane. So it is a lot. We in this state, we're unique in that the gas tax is our only source, and that's why you're seeing that in the project or in the proposals.
Yeah, there is a plan for a slow phase-in of this increase in the gasoline tax, but only a part of the funding for our future transportation needs. Vehicles are a lot more fuel efficient these days, and so we've actually been bringing in less revenue through the gasoline tax, and that's why we have to find other sources. But the other thing that I'm concerned about as an environmentalist is the cost to the environment of the use of gasoline. There are what we call externalities to the use of gasoline, and we really don't pay the full cost. So I personally don't mind paying a little bit more for gasoline, because I know I'm polluting by using it, and also the gasoline tax is a fair form of taxation, because if you use gasoline, you're driving on the roads and therefore wearing them down, and it's sort of a user fee. It pays for the upgrades of those same roads that you're driving on.
Thank you for that great answer about funding our transportation system and the gas tax from Bobby in Kirkland. And this is a reminder to everybody who has just joined the call that if you would like to ask a question of Representative Goodman or Representative Springer, please press *3 on your phone right now. And next, we're going to move to a call and a question from Angela. And Angela has a question about funding for our K through 12 education system. Angela, are you with us?
Yep, I'm here. I'm out in Woodinville, Washington. And my question is, well, first, just a quick statement. I'm a parent over at North Shore School District, and we love our school district and our teachers and our staff there. And unfortunately, due to budget issues, our school district is facing cutting our class time hours with a weekly teacher professional development and classroom planning. So we'll have a half day of school every week next year, almost every week next year. And I just feel like that is, you know, that's a huge impact on our students, cutting several hours a week out of their classroom time because the state isn't able to pay for the teachers to have that professional development time. And, you know, they need that time to prepare and to plan lessons and to collaborate. And now our students are facing that cut directly. And I wondered what you could say to that, and how you guys plan to fully fund the education that our state demands for our students.
Thanks, Angela. This is Representative Goodman. I very much share your concern. I have a son who graduated from kindergarten today in our local public school, and I have a daughter who finished up fourth grade today. And I feel the same stresses and same anxiety that you do, seeing our public schools stressed by the limited resources, and including reducing the amount of time. We, on our Wednesdays here in the Lake Washington School District, we have reduced hours as well. I think the school day should be longer. I think the school year should be longer. The research is pretty clear that what we need is more math, more English, more school for our kids to get the skills they need to be competitive in our, you know, in the global economy, and more than that, just to become, you know, good functioning citizens and well-rounded people. We need a huge new investment in our public school system. The state Supreme Court has mandated the McCleary decision, you probably know about this, that we increase funding over the course of time by maybe $8 to $10 billion. Now, we're starting with a down payment. I hope it's going to be at least $1 billion or more this budget session. I was hoping for $2 billion. But without that increased funding, our kids are going to not going to have the same opportunities we did. And I'm very much hoping that we don't just suck funding out of other sources and leave social services and the safety net too weak, but that we come up with new revenue. And this is the major debate going on right now. Will we have any new revenue to support our public schools, we're just beginning this new investment, and I'm a very strong supporter, just to let you know, of this massive new funding for our public schools, because my kids and their future is at stake as well.
And Angela, let me just add that I certainly agree with Roger. Under the McCleary decision, we have an obligation over the next 5 years to fully fund K-12 education. The House has a proposal right now to spend roughly $1 billion over and above what we're currently spending for K-12 in this next biennium. And specifically, we have a plan of spending over the next several years that addresses a number of things, and one of them is increased instructional hours. The notion of a half day every week next year is unconscionable. We should be going in the opposite direction. And part of our funding formula in the out years, in the next two or three biennium, is to increase instructional hours in our K-12 system. So hopefully that will help. I think we're making a significant down payment, so you should see some improvement in the next year or two. I'm reminded here to remind all of you that if you have a question, be sure to press star 3, and that gets you in the queue.
Thank you, Representatives Goodman and Springer, for those wonderful answers. And thank you, Angela, for telling us about some of the struggles you're encountering in the North Shore School District. And next, we are going to move to a phone call from Fred in Woodinville. And Fred has some concerns about funding for 211. It's a statewide system for call centers. And I'm going to put Fred on the line here.
Hello, gentlemen. My name is Fred Uhosh. I'm calling from Woodinville, and I'm one of the volunteers that actually works with the 211 system in the crisisclinic.org, and so I was informed that there was a funding crisis there associated with the WIN 211 program, and I guess it was labeled H-Bill 1971, and so I wondered if with the new funding program, the budget, whether that funding for that program was restored and will be available.
Fred, thanks for the question. This is Representative Springer. You bring up a topic near and dear to my heart. I'm a huge supporter of 211. In fact, I spent a day out at the center in Northgate listening in on phone calls and listening to the people like yourself make the referrals there. It's an amazing system. I specifically requested a $3 million budget appropriations this year in the budget to fully fund 211. Unfortunately, that was dropped from the budget when we had to back off by about $800 million. So right now I'm trying to find a new source for that funding. One of those sources that we're looking at is a what we call a telecom bill. I don't want to go into the details there because it's very complicated. It has to do with evening out our tax system with all of our telephone companies, but it's a net revenue gain to the state. And I'm hoping I can find $2 to $3 million additional revenue for 211 in that bill, and hopefully get that negotiated before the end of next week. If not, 211 will continue functioning as is, which is kind of on a shoestring, admittedly. And if that has to happen, then we'll be right back at it in January. So stay tuned. The work is not over on that one yet.
Thanks for your call, Fred. I, too, along with Representative Springer, strongly support 211 and funding it as fully as possible. It's a fantastic sort of one-stop shopping for social services and the help that people really need, part of our safety net program. So I too, support as much funding for it as necessary.
Thank you for that great question about the 211 system. This is a reminder that if you are on the line, you are in a live telephone town hall with Representatives Goodman and Springer. And if you'd like to ask a question, please press star 3 on your keypad now. And next, we are going to move to a question from Ralph. And Ralph has some concerns about funding for our state park system. Ralph, are you with us?
I sure am.
Great. Go ahead.
Well, I have a question about state parks. It seems like we sort of put that way on the bottom of the totem pole, and the prices go up to visit the state parks, and we end up eliminating and cutting back more state parks. And that's really about the only decent kind of recreation that people that are really kind of on the bottom of the food chain have. And so if you look at what the state spends on some of our road projects, maybe there's some way to shuffle that off from the roads to the parks. I mean, there's just, you know, we look more at spending more, not looking at where we're spending. And I think that I live in rural King County, and I've lived here for many, many years. And Novelty Hill is one place where there's a big roundabout that's been going in. Union Hill is another one, the roundabout that goes in. They're not really doing much for the traffic because those are just two-lane roads going up and down. So I don't know. Maybe I'm kind of barking in the wind on this one, but it is a big concern to me.
Ralph, thanks for your this is Representative Goodman. I share your concern about state parks. I've enjoyed them in many counties in western Washington. I was in Camano Island recently and up in Whatcom down in Thurston County. This year, 2013, is the 100th anniversary of the Washington State Park System, and it's a shame that we are not funding it adequately in this anniversary year. It's one of the casualties in this current budget battle. It's extremely low priority, unfortunately. I've co-sponsored legislation to increase funding for state parks, and I hope that that's considered as part of the final budget negotiation. This summer, July and August in particular, are the only months when we make any money, when the state makes any money on the parks. We do have the Discovery Pass now. We used to be one of only 10 states that charged nothing, but after the economy fell apart, we did need to charge a little bit for use of the parks, hoping that's not too offensive. But if we don't solve the budget before July 1st, it's going to be devastating to the budget for the parks, because that's when people use them in the summertime. So I'm very concerned and want to support funding for the parks. And as I said, I've co-sponsored legislation on that. And let's hope we can solve this one.
Ralph, Representative Springer here. Let me just add a couple of things. There is a certain irony in our budget struggles right now. State parks used to be funded at about $100 million per biennium. It's now down to $23 million, which is why you're seeing other ways of trying to fund it with the Discover Pass and others. And ironically, we're struggling to keep our parks open and still cutting funding for them in what is now the centennial year of our state park system. Sort of a cruel irony. I do have to say, however, your notion of finding some money in the state highway system or the road system can't be done, because the money that's used to pay for roads comes from the gas tax, and that's constitutionally protected. It cannot be used for any other source other than highways. So consequently, parks have to get in the queue with all the other, what we would refer to as discretionary spending, and unfortunately, sometimes parks will come out second to higher education or K-12 or funding services for developmentally disabled or whatever it might be. So they will be fully funded again, but it's going to require our economy to turn around and for the state to find some additional revenue. So wish I had a better answer.
Thank you for that good question about funding our state park system. And this is a reminder to everybody on the line that if you would like to ask a question of the representatives, please press star 3 on your keypad now. And next, we are going to get a question from Mike in Woodinville. And Mike is wondering about a Senate proposal that will cap all non-education spending in our state. Mike, are you with us?
Yes, I am. Thanks, Roger and Larry, for sponsoring this phone call and being accessible to all your constituents. I, like everybody, I think, on this call, really appreciate the opportunity to hear firsthand your take on where we're at on the various issues confronting the legislature. Probably as important as any of them is this Senate Bill 5895. I wonder if you could kind of share a little bit more detail on that bill, its potential impacts, not just in the near term, but in the long term for all Washingtonians were it enacted. And I wonder, too, if there's any kind of a counterpart in the House. I wonder if it's what your views are on whether or not it's going to pass and what the likelihood of that is.
Thanks, Mike. This is Representative Springer. The bill you're referring to, 5895, is a Senate-proposed bill. There is no companion bill in the House. That bill would, as you mentioned, would cap all non-education spending at the rate of inflation. That on the surface sounds good, but it's a really bad idea. And the reason it's a bad idea is that there are elements of non-education spending that clearly go up faster than the overall rate of inflation. Healthcare costs is a good example. And if we had to cap everything, all non-education spending at inflation, that means that in order to maintain a contractual obligation under a contract for health benefits, we would have to cut back on some other general service. And the more important way to address this issue is for people to let their legislators know exactly what they want us to spend our money on. And most of you all do a pretty good job of doing that. And then we make a decision at that point as to where that money needs to be spent. This is analogous to Initiative 601 that was passed several years ago, and it really hamstrings the legislature in its ability to move money around from account to account, depending on what happens. Construction costs go up, cost of materials go up, that don't always bear a direct relation to inflation. So I'm not supportive of that bill. I don't think that bill has any chance of passing.
Yeah, Mike, thanks for bringing this up. This is Representative Goodman. I agree completely with Representative Springer on this. This is a proposal only coming out of the Senate. I believe it's sort of part of an ideological effort to limit the so-called big government. If you take a look, actually, at Washington state government, it has shrunk significantly in the last few years because of the economic problems generally. But we can't be investing in public education at the expense of everything else. We need to be funding our critical infrastructure projects. We need to be cleaning up Puget Sound, which is really at risk. We can't be withering our pension systems away. This is more of a, a message bill, you know, that we need to stop runaway government spending and all that sort of thing that we hear about. But if you take a close look, we have really shrunk both government spending and the number of government employees and our activities, including Puget Sound cleanup and our investment in infrastructure, things that I believe we need to increase. And so very much opposed to this ideologically based proposal.
Thank you, Mike, for that great question. And on the topic about government spending and education funding, we have a poll question tonight on the phone, and we want to know whether you support closing tax exemptions to fund education. If you do support closing tax exemptions, press 1 on your keypad. If you do not support closing tax exemptions to fund education, press 2 on your keypad, and I will be reporting the results as the night goes on. And just a reminder, if you would like to ask the representatives a question, please press *3 on the phone. And next, we are going to get a question from Bob, and Bob is concerned about our DUI laws and their enforcement. This is a real hot-button issue that I think a lot of folks are concerned about these days. Bob, are you with us?
Yes, this is for Representative Goodman. You mentioned you're sponsoring some legislation on the drunk driving. And my concern is that from what I've read in the newspaper, the existing laws on the books aren't well enforced to begin with. King County has recently reported that it takes up to 90 days. In the meantime, multiple offenders are out offending again. And I'm not sure what the details are in your bill. I'd like to know a little bit about it. But from what I've read, it's the multiple offenders who cause the most problems. It's the folks who repeatedly offend. They drive at very high levels of alcohol in their blood, often driving on suspended driver's licenses and so forth. And they're not being dealt with adequately. If this is just an attempt, and I hope it isn't, just to lower it, it'll snare more social drinkers in the net. We used to have a .10, and it seems to me, both from the police perspective and others, the problem is in other areas. It's repeat vendors, irresponsible levels of alcohol, and so forth. Can you enlighten me a little bit on that?
Yeah, thanks, Bob. Let me describe what we're working on right now to strengthen the DUI laws. We are not trying to widen the net to capture social drinkers or first-time offenders. We are focusing on the repeat or multiple offenders. We're not lowering the blood alcohol limit. We might have heard about that. That'll be a proposal that's perhaps considered later. So what we're going to do now is increase resources for our prosecutors in the high-volume counties, Pierce, King, and Snohomish, so that they can bring charges much quicker. What's happening is people are getting pulled over, and then they're let go, basically. They can continue driving, and then they get something in the mail months later. Meanwhile, they've already been driving drunk, and quite a number of tragic fatalities recently have been by people who have been repeat offenders. They've been arrested but not convicted. There's been this long pending period. So a couple of things we're going to do. We're going to put the ignition interlock device, the alcohol detection device, a breathalyzer, in the cars of these repeat offenders very soon after they are arrested, not after they're convicted. I mean, right, we put them in the car after they're convicted now, but there's this dangerous window that we want to close. And we are going after the repeat offender in general. If there's any increased punishment or anything like that, about 80% of the fatalities and serious injuries are related to the repeat offenders. So you're right on. That's where we're focusing. It's not an unreasonable effort. And one final thing is that over the last 6 or 7 years that we've been working on strengthening the DUI laws, we have made a lot of progress. So we have to acknowledge that we've made some good progress reducing deaths and injuries on the roadways by putting the ignition interlock device in the cars. We've reduced deaths by about 30% in the last few years. We just have to make further progress now. And you are absolutely correct. Focus on the repeat offenders. And let's get those charges filed and get the interlock devices in the cars sooner. And I hope the bill that we're considering now will get that done.
I couldn't agree with Roger more. He is a nationally renowned legislator with regard to DUI law, and I just follow his lead. So I agree with him completely.
Thank you, Bob, for that great question about DUIs and drunk driving. And this is a reminder to everyone that you are on a live telephone town hall with Representatives Goodman and Springer. And if you'd like to ask a question, please press *3. And next, we are going to take a question from Rama in Woodinville. And he has a question about how we're going to reduce spending versus raising taxes. Rama, are you with us?
Yes, I am.
Please go ahead.
So, you know, one of the things I notice is that across government, both in the state and in the federal area, that there tends to be a kind of drive that we have to increase the amount of taxes or increase the amount of revenue provided to government as opposed to reducing overall expenditure. And, I mean, part of this is just looking at things like I do believe in funding education. I do believe in funding the road system, and we have an appropriate system for that with the gas tax. The questions I have are around things that seem kind of strange to me, working in the private sector my entire life, such as, you know, retirement funds for government employees, right? The rest of us working in the private sector are pretty much expected to save and be able to take care of ourselves and put aside money and put aside our own retirement when we reach that age, if we ever do. Some of the other things are where you're looking at, you know, a $1 billion increase for education spending. And as I look through the budget line items, you know, I see $28 billion in human services, $11.6 billion of that in the healthcare authority, and almost $12 billion in the Department of Social and Health Services. And I understand that a good portion of that is, you know, necessary spending. I also understand that a good portion of it just looks good because it's helping people. But part of my question is when do you actually say we're going to stop trying to gain more revenue and work with what we have and work within the bounds that, you know, the people in the state are actually making money? In case of, you know, individuals, a lot of times that our revenue doesn't necessarily go up. Commonly, our revenue actually goes down, especially as things get tighter economically. It goes down substantially. But then we still hear, well, that caused a budget shortfall because we didn't have the taxes coming in. So we want to increase the tax percentage and take more away from people who are now making less. And I also understand that, you know, obviously in the healthcare side of things and in the health administration, there's a large amount of it looks good because it's we're helping people. But it's also when are people allowed to fail, right? I don't necessarily think we should be trying to keep everybody up regardless of what situation they're in.
Well, Rama, let me take a shot at that. This is Representative Springer. Let me just sort of add a perspective that I think is important when we have this kind of conversation about taxes versus cutting spending. Over the last 5 years, the state has cut over $12 billion out of its state budget in the aggregate over that period of time, caused by the recession, of course. So I think it's fair to say that the state has been dramatically reducing spending. We are currently, our revenues have bumped up a little bit this year over what they were last year, about $2 billion more. Sounds like a lot until you realize that our revenues that we are generating in this upcoming year are just now reaching the levels they were at in 2007. So it sounds like we're raking in a whole bunch more money, but we basically just caught up to where we were over 6 years ago. So $12 billion have been cut. We've laid off 8,000 workers. We have fewer state workers per capita than we have than we've had since 1995. So there have been dramatic cuts, and those have resulted in seniors losing health care, children losing feeding programs, parents of developmentally disabled children losing home health care. And I bring those up, and I know it sounds sort of melodramatic, but those are real cuts. Those things actually have happened. Now we add to that a Supreme Court decision that says, oh, by the way, state of Washington, you are not spending enough money to fully fund K-12 education. We think you need to add $4 to $5 to $6 billion more than you are currently spending. And the state is kind of caught in a rock and a hard place. As a small business owner myself, and I've certainly taken my cut in salary, and in fact, my wife and I don't take much out of our business anymore just in order to keep our employees. So I understand the frustration there, but I also know that if we're going to build a state that needs to come out of this recession, a place that we're proud of and that our children can grow up and go to school, we need the revenue to do that. The tax increases that the House has proposed have been in the form of actually ending tax exemptions as opposed to going out and passing a general tax increase. We haven't passed a general tax increase in a long time. I'll let Roger enter in here as well. This is a very rich conversation that we need a lot more conversation about.
Yeah, this is Representative Goodman, just to add this issue about tax exemptions. We've been analyzing which tax exemptions to which industries are not generating any new jobs, are not bringing any new revenue, are not benefiting the economy, but are only benefiting these individual companies very often, tax exemptions that have been in place for decades, even like a century. So we're picking and choosing those tax exemptions that are not benefiting the state and the people and choosing to close them and not taxing the people in general in order to pay for education. But Rama, I do sympathize with you, or I understand what you're saying when you talk about wasteful government expenditures. I used to be a state agency director myself in Olympia, and as an agency director, I witnessed quite a bit of waste, I guess you could say. And I estimate that we could probably eliminate $500 million in government waste to $400 or $500 million. That sounds like a lot, but when you take $500 million as part of a $35 billion budget, it's really not a lot, and the effort to get rid of that would be quite expensive in itself. The cost of health care is really what's driving our budget crisis, and the cost of health care is a private sector matter that we have to deal with, and we're hoping that the federal health care reform will help to address that. We're taking the lead nationally in implementing it. So if we can bend the healthcare cost curve, we might be able to keep our budget under control. But we can't wait to increase our investment in K-12 now And so for that, we really do need new revenue, and we're trying not to tax the people in general for that purpose.
Thank you for that great question. And this is a report on the poll that we asked earlier in this teleconference. And we asked you, do you support closing tax exemptions to fund education? And 64% of you said, yes, I do support closing tax exemptions to fund education. And 36% of you said, no, I do not support that. And because this is such an important issue to so many people, we are going to take another question about education funding. And if you have a question, you can press *3 on your keypad right now to be connected to a volunteer who will take your call. So we're going to take a call from Ken, and Ken wants to know, why is education not funded adequately now when it was in the past? What has changed? Ken, are you with us?
Yeah, that's. Thank you very much for taking my question. And for me, when I look at the situation, I see very much the same picture that the previous caller did, that at one time the state had enough money to fund education, and the problem is that it has less now. So it looks like there's been a lot of diversion of revenue away from education to other programs, which seem to typically happen when revenue was easy, when the economy was doing well, and then when we have to shrink back to work within our means again, education gets cut in favor of these other programs. And I would like to second that notion that what we should be doing instead is going back to education first and the other programs second, because every time we raise taxes, it costs people. There's been a lot of euphemisms about this. For example, well, we'll just tax bottled water. That's a tax loophole. Well, people buy bottled water. We aren't taxing the water. We're taxing the people who buy the water. And, oh, we're going to even out things with the phone companies, and that'll be a revenue enhancement for the state. I pay a lot of taxes on my phone bill, and I'm sure everybody else does. And you're talking about increasing the taxes I pay on my phone bill so that the state can get more money. So what I'd really like to see is the state to reallocate money away from other less important programs so that education is fully funded before we do other things.
Ken, this is Representative Springer. Great question. It is a good follow-up to Rama's question. Couple of things as a matter of perspective. I taught elementary school back in the mid-70s, and at that time, Washington was in the top five in the nation in per-pupil spending and class size. Fast forward now, roughly 40 years later, I'm in the legislature, and I'm looking around and realizing that we're now in the bottom five. I can't tell you with any degree of honesty or integrity what the heck happened during that 30 or 40 years. I was busy running my own business. But I think the notion that education spending was diverted to other issues is probably accurate. We are now struggling to reverse that trend. Most of us in the legislature are committed to doing that. It is going to require some very hard decisions to be made about our entire tax structure. You mentioned the taxes that you pay on your phone. There is no proposal down there to increase taxes on your phone service unless you have a landline. Those people who have a landline, there is a proposal that is agreed to by all telephone companies and all telecom providers to apply sales tax to the basic landline service. That's never been applied before. And it's a matter of recognizing that all other phone services pay that tax. So it's a matter of fairness in that regard, and a way of also subsidizing some of the rural phone companies. So that's the proposal with regard to the phone tax. Whether that passes or not remains to be seen. It's a matter of negotiations. I will say one thing about the notion of fund education first. We hear that phrase a lot, and it's an important one, and I think it's one that we all agree to, that education ought to be our primary goal, which it is, by the way. It's about 55% of our budget. But it also doesn't recognize that equally important to educating a fourth grader is making sure that fourth grader arrives at school clothed, fed, and sheltered. You can have the best teacher in the world and the lowest class size and all the technology money can buy, but if the kids come to school hungry or without proper clothing, or they spent the night in a car, they're not going to learn. So we have to recognize that this is a two-part question. So thank you, Ken.
Thanks, Ken. This is Representative Goodman. Representative Springer just said what I was going to say, that this notion of funding education first is something that we can agree on, and yet in the budget process it's hard to, for instance, if we were to take whatever we want to spend on education and spend it, dedicate it to education, and then whatever's left, fund social services, environmental protection, and so forth, the public safety, our prisons, and so forth, we just would not have enough because of the population growth and because of the effects of the recession and limited revenue recently. And, again, on top of that, the McCleary decision mandating us to spend a significantly higher amount on education. So hungry and sick and homeless kids can't learn. So it really is a balancing act. The amount that we dedicated to our K-12 system in the early 90s was a little bit above 50% of the budget. And that went down to about 42% or 43%, 41%, and at about 2001. So since in the last decade, we've actually been building back what we lost and investing more and more in our public education system, our K-12 system, and we're approaching the 50% mark again. But we have a long way to go, and with this Supreme Court mandate, we really do need to raise a little bit more revenue. And again, not through a general tax on low income or citizens in general, but closing wasteful tax loopholes and taking account of the fact our population has increased and we need to improve the quality of education so our kids can be competitive. So it's complicated. We can all agree that we should fund education first. That's actually what our Constitution calls for. But we can't sort of segment the budget in categories like that because it is interrelated. And do bear in mind that health care, I do have to repeat, the cost of health care, which is a private sector matter, is what has blown the budget in the last 2 decades. So we have to bring that under control. Then we can solve other budgetary items.
Well, thank you, Ken, for that very informative question about our state budget and education funding. And this is a reminder that if you're on this live telephone town hall, all you need to do is press *3, and you will be sent into the queue to ask a question of the representative. And now we are going to move to a question from Josephine. And Josephine wants to know about taxing satellite TV. Josephine, are you with us?
Yes, I'm here.
Please go ahead.
Hi. My question was, what is the new satellite TV tax that's being proposed? Because I'm already being charged the sales tax. I mean, it's part of my bill every month, so why add a new one? And what is it for?
The proposal, and it's simply a proposal now. It's part of the budget negotiation process, so there's no guarantee that it will actually occur. In fact, I kind of have my doubts personally, but there are a number of charges, and I have to apologize, Josephine. I don't remember exactly which one it is. I'm not sure it's sales tax. It may be access. I'm not altogether sure. But there is a differentiation. There's a different tax rate. Different taxes are paid by those who have satellite TV reception versus those who have it over the internet or cable. And there was an effort to want to level the playing field, to make everybody's TV, what you pay for your TV reception, equal whether you get it from a cable company or satellite. That's the impetus behind it. But again, I don't know whether that I'm not really confident that that's going to pass at this point. But stay tuned. It's going to be part of the negotiation process in the last few days.
I believe there are also, this is Representative Goodman, there are also some threatened lawsuits by the telecommunications companies against the state because of this, that we don't have equity between the different sources of television transmission. So if we don't provide the equal form of taxation for satellite and cable and other forms, we'll get sued. And we'll have to pay literally hundreds of millions of dollars to taxpayers' expense. So it's actually a legal matter and just a question of equity. If you get TV from whatever source, you will be paying the equal amount of tax, whatever the source is.
Thank you, Josephine, for that question about a proposal to tax your TV. And this is a reminder that if you would like to ask a question of the representative, please press star 3 on your keypad. And next we're going to go to a question from Sarah in Woodinville. And Sarah has a question in a response to Representative Goodman's answer earlier in the telephone town hall. I believe she wants to know about what the benefits are to students if they have longer school days. Sarah, are you with us?
Yeah, I'm here.
Please go ahead with your question.
So I'm in high school. I'm a high school student of North Shore School District. And for me personally, in the last year, I've experienced two of my friends committing suicide from what ended up to be most school-related stress. And it's like, I know with the new North Shore School District policy, and they're like, the school being shortened, like, one day out of the week, that it's, like, for some younger students' parents, it's more stressful. But I'm, like, I really want to know if, like, the legislators and the people that were working on this were really considering what was right for the students and not just, you know, what was going to be right for education or, like, the funding in general, but that it can actually benefit the students more. And especially for the high school students, because I know, like, the parents, like, elementary school parents still figure it out. Like, teenage years suck, honestly. And, so, like, depression's at a really high rate among teenagers right now. And I just wanted to know, it's like, is that really being addressed as an issue?
Yeah. Thanks very much, Sarah. This is Representative Goodman. A couple things come to mind. First of all, I believe that in high school, the adolescent age students should be starting the school day later. The body of a teenager needs more sleep, and so it might cause a lot of disruption with bus schedules and with team, sports team schedules and so forth. But I think for the interest of students at that age and your age, it would be better for you to start school later in the day. You'd get enough rest, and you'd be better, you know, ready to learn and succeed better in school. The second thing is, we don't have enough counselors in our schools, trained prevention intervention specialists, not people who just help you with your homework, but people who can train to help you with underlying problems in your family and your life, to treat, help to make referrals for depression and other mental illness and so forth. That is more and more prevalent among our high school students. And we need to invest more in that. However, in Japan, for instance, and most European countries, the school day is significantly longer. In Japan and France and a lot of other countries, students go to school on Saturdays. In many countries, the school year is 240 days long. We only have 180 days in our school year. We're also headed towards a 24-credit core curriculum. Right now, only 19 credits are required. So in order to get the 24 credits in, we're going to have 7 periods in the day, not just 6. And that means longer days and perhaps longer years. This isn't just about competitiveness in the global economy. It really is about becoming well-rounded people. So on the one hand, yes, we need to provide more support for kids in school and accommodate their needs, both physical and mental. But we also do need to provide more education. The research is very clear that more is better, and kids will benefit from more education, which means longer days and longer years. One other thing, finally, is perhaps to change the scheduling of the school year so that it's year-round with longer vacations and yet a shorter summer period. The 3-month period is actually quite harmful. Kids forget a lot, and it's a 3-month period when it's not very helpful for educational achievement. So that's what they're doing in Canada now and a lot of other countries. So there's some reforms we can make to the schedule and so forth, but I do think we need a longer school day and a longer school year.
Thanks, Sarah, for the question. Teen suicide is a critical issue, and we are very, very in tune to that and want to do everything we can for it. I'm going to just parrot what Roger said and not go on anymore about that. We want to try and get one more question in. So thanks, Sarah, for the call. Appreciate it.
Thank you, Sarah. And it looks like we'll have time for one more question tonight. And we are going to take a call from Jack in Kirkland about transit funding. But if you're still on the line, please don't hang up because I will give you instructions to leave a message and the representatives can get back to you on your question. So on that, we are going to take a call from Jack in Kirkland on transit funding. Jack, are you with us?
Yeah, I'm here.
Please go ahead.
Yeah, hi. Hey, I'm a transit driver. And we're having a lot of trouble with funding. We're going to be $75 million short when our contract is up next year, and when they eliminate the $40 tab thing. And right now, I guess in the budget is a transportation funding law that allows counties to do their own taxing for transit and for other things. And I was just wondering how that's going because. I know King County, if they got that, they would vote it in because, you know, King County Transit is one of the best in the United States. So, anyway, that's what I was wondering.
Thanks, Jack. This is Representative, Representative Springer. You're quite right. There is a proposal in the transportation revenue package that we talked about earlier. In fact, our first question tonight had to do with that package around the gas tax. But there is another proposal that's part of that package that would give local governments, counties and cities, local taxing authority, generally in the form of motor vehicle excise tax authority, voter approved, to help fund their transit systems. We recognize that the cutbacks to local transit have been devastating. In fact, there have been over 50% cuts in some areas, Pierce Transit being a classic example, but Community Transit up in Everett and Metro in King have cut back service dramatically. For a lot of people, this is their only way to get to work, their only way to get to the doctor, their only way to get to their kids' school. So we've got a proposal in the House in our transportation package that we hope to pass this week and send it over to the Senate. And the best thing you can do is get in touch with your senator and see if maybe they can help pass that. So thanks, Jack, for the call. We completely concur.
Yeah, thanks, Jack. This is Representative Goodman. I agree very much. We need to give localities the option to ask their voters for an increase in funding for local transit. I'm always in support of giving local governments the option to ask their voters for this sort of thing. It is a very active proposal for King County, and so I'm certainly a yes vote on that one. To put it in the transportation revenue package. So we'll see what happens.
And with that, we're told that we're just about out of time. We only have 2 or 3 minutes left. So this is Representative Springer, and I just wanted to take this opportunity to, again, thank you all for taking the time to join us for this teletown hall. It really does mean a lot to us. We cannot do our job if we do not hear from our constituents. So please feel free to call us, email us anytime. And we'll certainly let you know the next time we do this. Again, thanks for taking the time to be with us tonight.
Yes, thank you. This is Representative Goodman. We really do rely on your input. Helps us know how to vote and also helps reinforce what we believe are the priorities and the values of our district, the 45th District. We have just answered questions in the last hour related to our public schools, social services, state parks, gasoline tax, drunk driving, telecommunications taxes, transit funding, a wide variety of issues that you are concerned about and we are too. So please keep in touch with us. It's how we know how to represent you the best. So thanks a lot for paying attention this evening, and we'll be staying in touch.
Thank you again, everyone who participated in the call this evening, for your great questions, and thank you to Representatives Goodman and Springer. And unfortunately, that's all the time we have for questions tonight, so if we didn't get to your question, we apologize, but please stay on the line, because in just a moment, you'll have a chance to leave a voicemail directly for Representative Goodman and Representative Springer, and I'm sure they will get back to you as soon as they can. Thank you so much, everyone, and have a wonderful evening.